Right, good evening, everyone. So today's topic is on the fundamental teachings of the of Buddhism, which is the Triple Gem. So how many of you have heard of Triple Gem before? Yes, good. Right, because we tend to talk a lot on the teachings of the Buddha on impermanence, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, dependent origination, emptiness. But a lot of time we didn't touch on the very, very basic, which is the Triple Gem. So the Triple Gem, the gem means something very precious. So the three very precious things in our life. So why do we call these three things so precious things in our life? So what are these three things? Anyone know? What does Triple Gem refers to? Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Good. Okay. So Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. All right. Now. So the Triple Gem. Refers to Buddha, the gem of Buddha, gem of Dharma, and gem of Sangha. All right. So for those of you who haven't seen some of these words, Buddha, of course you read this word before. So Buddha is the founder of Buddhism, right? So he realized the truth, he attained enlightenment, and we look upon the Buddha as our teacher. Dharma means the teachings of the Buddha. So the Buddha attained enlightenment, he knows how to end suffering, and luckily he left behind some teachings for us. That's very important, especially for us in this era. We can't go to the Buddha and knock at the Buddha's door all the time and say, Buddha, how to answer this question, how to do this and how to do that. We have to refer to the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And that's why it is very important as well. Now, so we have a lot of books in the universe library. How many of you going to read the books? Of course, this day you have a lot of online resources, right? But still, you find that it's very different. Two, if you listen to the speaker who speak and explain, where you can ask questions immediately if you don't understand. Some people tend to say, oh, I just like to stay at home and read online. I can just learn Buddhism online. Do you think it's possible?
It's missing the Sangha.
Yeah, it's missing the Sangha. And the other thing is that when we read online, what will happen is that we will tend to choose articles that we like to read. And so anything that doesn't click our interests or our personalities, we'll try to, I do not like this. Say for example, you are a person who is more philosophical. You like a lot of theoretical things like impermanence, dependent origination, analysis of consciousness and things as such. You are very good, you like all those very refined things. But when you start to talk about cultivation of merits, generosity, you say, no, this one is not mine. You do not like to read those. And so at the end, our development will not be balanced. But if you have a Sangha members that you listen to, and the Sangha members, yes, it's good that you like to study the scripture, you like to spend a lot of time on scripture and meditation, but sometimes we need to relate with others. We need to have human relationship and caring and kindness. And that is a part of the practice as well. Because it is by relating to others, you realize how self-centered you are. In theory, we know that we need to reduce our self-centeredness. But when you are not mingling with others, you do not know how strong is your jealousy. And you do not know how not caring you are. That while your friends immediately feel sympathetic to certain person, you got no feeling. And these are all part of practice. So practice of Buddhism has to be in daily life. And so with the Sangha members, they themselves devote in the learning of the Buddha's teaching, and they try to explain the teachings in according to the era that they are in. So we use modern language to explain, modern examples to explain, so that you can understand and apply it to your daily life better. And that's why Sangha members are important, and also they carry with them the responsibility of prolonging the teachings. So today, 2600 years after the Buddha's Parinirvana, we are still able to listen to the teaching. We need to be very thankful to the Sangha members. Although Sangha members today are not the noble person, not like during Buddha's time, we got a lot of noble Sangha members who attend enlightenment, but still, even in this era, you got Sangha members who are willing to devote their life into learning the teachings, try to reduce their afflictions, try to share the teachings and prolong the right teachings of the Buddha, is still rare in this society where everyone tends to chase after material things, wealth, enjoyment. It is quite rare as well. And that's why you'll find that Sangha is very important. So the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha together, we call them the triple gem, three very precious things in our life. So, and this is something that we need to, it's a fundamental, and as a Buddhist practitioner, we need to understand the virtues of the Buddha, the virtues of the Dhamma, and the virtues of the Sangha, and take them wholeheartedly in ourselves. Then you'll find that this Buddhism will give you spiritual support. If we only study theoretically without Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha in your heart, that's where you'll find that Buddhism is a philosophy, not a religion. So Buddhism has a lot of philosophy, a lot of explanation on psychology, but it is still a religion, because as we talk about this in before, that definition for religion, some dictionaries definition is that you worship a god or external authority, superior authority, that is a religion. But there's also definition on religion where you say that there's a founder, there are teachings, there are followers. That's also form a religion. Is that right? So there's a founder and he have a structured set of teachings, and there's a congregation. So if you look at this, there's the Buddha as the founder, Dhamma is the teaching, Sangha is the assembly, the followers, or the congregation.
I never think of as a religion.
Yeah.
I always think of it as a
way of life.
It's like escape. It's like it is precious teaching to gain enlightenment, to escape.
To escape.
And maybe come back, unless you choose to come back.
All right.
But a religion is based on just a belief. A belief is based on not knowing something. So I always think Buddha Sakyamuni was he got it and he shared that with us, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And we get that. We get to experience that journey as well, best we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, but I don't think it's just escape. Yeah. It's to free ourselves from suffering. Yeah, free ourselves from suffering. That touched on the basic questions on, as I think I've talked about this in the Chinese Dharma talk a lot as well, that fundamentally you find that everyone do feel that they are imperfection in life. They are dissatisfaction in life, there are uncertainty in life that make our mind not at rest. Regardless of what religion it is, regardless of who they are, you find that from native tribes until the civilized society, everyone's mind is looking for happiness, peace and happiness. However, the approach that we take to find happiness differs, partly because we didn't identify the right causes of frustration. So we thought, I'm not free. I feel constrained. I want to be really, really free. But somehow I feel that there are things beyond my control. And that's why you find that the native tribe will worship the fire, worship the moon, worship the river, worship the ocean. Whenever they go out to the ocean, they pray to the god or spirit of the ocean. Whenever they go into the forest, they pray to the spirit of the trees and just hope that they bestow them with good luck, or just make sure that they are not upset with them, they wouldn't create trouble for them. So in other words, deep in our heart, there's this sense of uncertainty and insecurity. And so human being then comes up with ways to comfort their mind. Yeah. And that's how, if you think about it, that's how all religions develop. All kinds of religions, different ways of explaining. So the Buddha is a person has that kind of experience as well. So we all try to chase after happiness. Some people try to chase after happiness by making a lot of money. Some people just want promotion one after another. But what do you have at the end? You have money. You want to make a lot of money, but at the end, yes, death will still come. So that's why you find that throughout history, we have emperors who once asked for longevity of life, right? So they try to pay money to ask people to seek for a cure that can allow us to have longevity of life.
Maybe they come back as a rock.
Come back as a rock. Yeah. So you find that we are hoping for something. Hoping for longevity, hoping for happiness, hoping for peace, but somehow we feel that it is not there. So there are so many teachings in the world, but the Buddha identified that the reason for this sense of uncertainty is because we do not understand the truth of all phenomena, the truth of ourselves. That we did not realize that we are chasing after a lot of things, one after another. But what is the truth of these things that we are chasing after? They keep changing. So the Buddha, even when he was a prince, when he was Prince Siddhartha, at the time that just before he once left the palace, the last incident that made him feel that he need to leave the palace was that after he seen the foresight, the old age, sickness and death. You all know about the Buddha story. And so the father, King Suddhodana, tried to entertain him with a lot of entertainment, with dancers and so on. And so one night, middle of the night, he wake up, he went to this dancing hall, he saw these dancers all lying around in the dancing hall, looking so messy. All the hairs are messy, the clothing are messy, the makeups are messy. And immediately he have this insight that they were so beautiful in the morning, dancing in front of me, singing in front of me. In a sudden, they look so awful. But think about in our real life, we chase after a lot of things and want to hold on to it.
It's like watching programs on TV. Yeah. Trying to move to the next.
Yeah. Well, especially those of you who study physics, you know how the images come about. Or those of you who play games, right? Sometimes you got this changing a picture. I saw some people playing with games, like you change the boxes into like from blue color to yellow color. You change one by one, gradually the whole page become yellow. It's kind of pilot change. And so that's what happened. Everything keep changing. But we waste so much energy chasing after things that it's just like bubble. So, but then we didn't realize that they are bubble. We try to cling on to them. So because when we see these things, we want to cling on to it. We didn't realize that they are just as fragile as bubble. And so because we have an expectation that I want this, and once I got this, I want it to be permanently in this good state forever. Our wish is against the natural law. The natural law is everything is subject to change. They are not permanent. So of course our wishes can never be fulfilled. So we have a lot of disappointment all the time. And that makes us very frustrated. So this is what we mean by ignorance. Ignorance about the truth, and then it develops into wrong attachment.
I think the story of the monkey looking into the
moon.
Water.
Yeah, the water, and try to grab the moon. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, same thing, right? So illusioner, it's illusioner. And so in life, we tend to cling on to a lot of phenomena that we see. In fact, whatever we see are just phenomena where causes and conditions come together. They form a certain phenomena. But then every moment, they're all in the process of changing. For example, this English Dharma talk that we have here. We said we have a EDT, we have an English Dharma talk on Friday night. It sounds like a fixed thing, right? In your pamphlet. It's like a fixed thing. And we are in a room, yes. But then what is English Dharma talk? Me? Is English Dharma talk? Or you? Or this classroom? It's combination of everything. And even when this combination of everything, like for example, now we say the English Dharma talk is going on now. It's going on, it's also finishing. it's in the process of changing. Just now we were meditating, now we're talking. Every moment, now you got new people coming in. You see, causes and conditions are different. See, just now we have less people, now we've got one more extra people. Right? The causes and conditions are different, and afterwards maybe someone wants to go to the toilet and they go away again. And so you can see that this EDT, so this EDT, we call it English Dharma talk. So we tend to say, oh, this EDT is like a real thing. But in fact, it is not. It's a combination of many, many causes and conditions. And every moment, there are things coming in, there are things going out. So it keeps changing. So in the beginning, more coming in. And then if I talk for too long, by 9 o'clock, some people will say, sorry, I need to go first. Sorry, I need to go first. And then one by one will go. And even if I want to keep talking, I will be talking to empty room. Right?
You're drawing the universe.
So, you find that, in fact, this is not a fixed thing. It is not a fixed thing. And same thing to our own body and mind as well. Every moment, just now we're meditating, you probably think you either focus or you have wandered around the world. Right? And some of you have taken your dinner, you feel good. Some of you are getting more and more hungry. Right? And so, our body keeps changing. Our blood is circulating, breathing in, breathing out. Your digestion is going on. And you feel like you're getting more and more tired. You say, why can't we finish earlier? It's Friday night, I want to go home to sleep. So, we are not identical as you, but we tend to cling on to ourselves as an I. See, we box ourselves up as an I. We box it up, solid mind. But in fact, it cannot be solid mind. We tend to make it into an I, and then start to develop a very strong self-centeredness. I want this. This is my watch. Don't you dare to take it. You see, immediately we develop a strong sense of I. This is my view. Why are you always against me? So I, and then you. So we start to have rivalry. But in fact, what is this I? It's, as we say, every moment is changing. It's same as this additive. You take in your food, you go to the toilet, you sleep well, your mind is refreshed, but then as come to this time, your mind is feeling like you feel very tired, right? So you find that every moment you are changing. And like sometimes when we eat too much, we put on weight. If you are very cautious and try to go to gym every day, you lost weight. Now, why? If this is fixed, then it should be just fixed. Why when you put in extra food, it become bigger? That means it's changeable, right? And again, it is a combination of many causes and conditions, and it's not fixed. Same thing with this. But then because of our ignorance, we tend to cling on to them and start to develop a very strong self-centeredness to ourselves and the things externally. So the Buddha said the cause of suffering comes from this ignorance, not understanding the truth, develop very strong self-centeredness, and from our perspective, we want everything, we want a lot of belongings, we want ourselves to be the best, we start to see others as rivalry, and start to have jealousy, arrogance, selfishness, and all this lead to suffering. And also, because of this I, we want ourselves to be more comfortable, we want ourselves to have more greed, desire, we always want to satisfy this I. And plus, we do not understand the things externally. So desire and ignorance causes suffering. So the Buddha is someone who have realized this truth. And he ended ignorance and desire. So he's free from greed, hatred, ignorance. He's at peace and at ease. So he's a teacher as such. He was like us, as Prince Siddhartha, have very comfortable life, as an ordinary person like us, but he was able to tame his mind and be able to overcome the afflictions in himself and realize the truth. And he likes to tell us that every one of us can actually practice and attain enlightenment like him. So the Buddha is a teacher who likes to share the teachings with others. So he's a teacher, he's very wise, who have the wisdom, who have the perfect wisdom of understanding the truth, identify what actually causes suffering, and that we have the ability to overcome it. So it's unlike other religion, they may say that suffering comes from some external authority or a thing as such, but in Buddhism it's all self-reliance, self-responsibility. But then, of course, self-responsibility, some people feel, is there a shortcut to overcome it? Can I just pray and get rid of my suffering? The Buddha said you need to put in effort yourself. You know, on one hand, it's good because you can put in, you are under control. You are under your own control. Because when you pray, you do not know how long you need to pray before that the external authority become happy and bestow you with good luck and make you happy. But if you work for you yourself, at least you have control. See? So that's why in Buddhism, Buddhism is a very self-responsible and self-reliance religion. So the Buddha is a great teacher who realized this truth, identified what causes suffering, and identified the truth of all phenomena and the truth of ourselves. So he has perfect wisdom, and not only he has wisdom. He's a great teacher with wisdom. It's very important because we all like to have peace and ease in this world that we're living in. We all look for some kind of guidance. We want to look for guidance. And so we want to look for a person who can give us guidance to be at peace and at ease. So the Buddha realizes truth, and he also proved that he himself has attained this realization, and he's peaceful and at ease. he's free from arrogance, jealousy, anger, selfishness, and his mind is pure and peaceful. So that's something very important. And that's something for us to remember as well. We, a lot of times we are looking for, we all, as we say, we all like to look for happiness and peace. Sometimes there are people who go around and seeking for different religion, and they may end up into a cult. Into a cult where someone say that they are the enlightened one. But then you feel that they, whatever they say, tends to be very arrogant and quite threatening in a way. They are sometimes, when I was at Macquarie University chaplaincy meeting, there was this Christian group that say this day there are this called high pressure cults. The special characteristic of cults are that they tends to say that they want you to follow them. And when you feel like you want to go away from them, that's when they start to say, no, when you go away, if you go away from us, something bad will happen to you. So that make the person, or especially young students, feel worried that if I feel like I don't want to join this group anymore, but then if I go away, they say that something bad will happen to me, and that's where they start to feel very scared. Now, if you are looking for a religion that gives you peace and ease, then you should not have this kind of feeling. If you go to a teacher or a religion where they say, you can only listen to me, if you don't listen to me, you're going to be in trouble. And you cannot ask any question. Then I met with a person who went to a cult, and the cult leader was saying that he's very good in his meditation and he can read others' mind. He said, when you're sitting here, you should not have a second thought. If you have any doubts on me, something bad will happen to you. So everyone sitting down there, do not dare to ask questions, do not need to think of anything else. But didn't we want to become more confident in our life and become more at ease? And the cult leader says that if you want to do anything, you better check with me if that's the right way to do it. So at the end, this person need to call this cult leader all the time. I need to move house, and is this the right thing to do? And my daughter is getting married. Is this how we do it? And things like that. Everything need to check with this cult leader to make sure that it is approved. Otherwise, if she didn't consult the cult leader, and then she herself will start to become worried that I forgot to consult the cult leader, is something bad is going to happen to me. But now, so is this how you want to believe a religion? You end up like no self-confidence. Everything has to just go and ask, and there's no self-decision that you can make yourself. That should not be the case, isn't it? And that gives you a lot of stress and pressure. That's why it's called high-pressure cults. And that's the characteristic of cults. Because religion is supposed to give you sense of comfort. Regardless of whether it's a religion that talks about nirvana or whatever it is, but a proper religion should give you at least some comfort.
So you want to meet the teacher that tells you to go away.
Yeah. So the Buddha is a teacher who realized the truth, but he presents himself as a person that has free from afflictions. Anger, hatred, ego, jealousy, selfishness. So he's peaceful in his mind, calm and peaceful in his mind, and plus he's very compassionate. He likes to help others. So if we have a teacher who is very wise but don't care about us, I'm enlightened. Sorry. I feel sorry for you, but I'm enlightened, then that's not very good, right? So you have a Buddha who is very compassionate. Not only that he's enlightened, he wants to share with us his teaching. And that's why when he attained enlightenment at the age of 35, he started to walk along the two banks of Ganges River, sharing the teachings with others. Be it little kids, elders, merchant, poor, at that time there were caste system, the slave, he helps the slave as well. And also kings, there were a lot of kings go to him for advice. So regardless of who they are, he give them advice and he try to guide them. And so he have this compassion, and also his compassion is equal to all. He treat everyone just like his own son. And not only that, he's also very skillful. He's able to teach according to the acceptance levels of people, and that's something very important as well. Because if we keep saying something which is very, very profound, then there are others who can't understand. And that's why you find that for beginners, they go to the Buddha and say, Buddha, how can we have a happy and peaceful life? The Buddha didn't say, oh, don't just think about happy life, we want to talk about Nirvana. There are people who are not ready to think about Nirvana, they just want to have the present life to be happy, right? And so the Buddha tell them, uphold the five precepts. Make sure you don't do wrong thing, do the right thing. So what is right and what is wrong? If you do not know how to justify right and wrong, use the five precepts, no killing, no stealing, no adultery, no lying, no intoxicants as a guideline, so that you don't feel guilt and remorse in yourself, you don't think to harm others, then, and you cultivate good causes, then you're going to lead yourself to happiness. So for beginners, you tell them the five precepts. And then for others who feel that, yes, to be a good person is good, but then at the end of our life, we still have to die. That kind of attachment to life, but then we have to go, is a great suffering. And so how can we be able to free from this kind of attachment to I and be liberated? Then the Buddha tell them, then you need to understand a bit more on that this life is full of imperfection, and understand the teachings of impermanence, understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions. And so in whatever you're doing, try to be always relate to the teachings of impermanence. Understand that in fact there's nothing that you can cling on. So you need to practice as such in your daily life, be able to let go in things that you are doing, see the truth during your daily life. Then when you come to the end, at the blink of your death, it's easier to let go. You can't just wait until the last minute and say, I want to let go. That's not easy. So that wisdom has to be developed during our daily life. And so he tell them to uphold the precepts, practice meditation, and listen to teachings and develop wisdom. And then for others who admire the Buddha's compassion and ability to help others, they say, I like to be like the Buddha, not only be free from cycle of life and death, but also have this ability to help others and have this compassion, the drive of compassion to help others. Then the Buddha tell them to develop the body mind, the great compassion, not just to seek for self-liberation, but always share the feelings of others, always put others as priority and try to help others. And so you develop compassion on the way when you practice. Then you find that you develop the bodhisattva mind. So that's how the Buddha tried to teach according to the acceptance levels of the people. It's not saying which is good, which is bad, because it all depends on the acceptance levels of the person at that time. And that's why you can see that the Buddha was very compassionate. He's enlightened, but he didn't look down on someone who just want to have a happy life. He didn't say, oh, your ambition is too low, it should aim for Nirvana. He never says that. He never let go any sentient beings. As long as he can share with them some teachings that can help them to reduce suffering and and set some foundation for them to gradually develop understanding on teachings, gradually path the way to be a better person, then he start from where they are. And that shows the compassion of the Buddha. And that's why we say the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha gave a lot of teaching. And that's why in Buddhism we have a lot of sutras. And the sutras that the Buddha gave depends on who are the audience. Sometimes the audience ask some questions. Some people may ask a bit more question on, can you explain a little bit more on what actually suffering? Yes, I know suffering, but I still didn't realize the truth of suffering. So the Buddha may have a sutra, a particular discourse that keep talking about suffering. And there are others who say, Buddha, can you explain a bit more on impermanence, or the Noble Eightfold Path, or the Four Noble Truths? So you find that the sutra are discourses of the Buddha. They are teachings of the Buddha according to the acceptance levels of the audience. And that's why we cannot say which sutra is better than the other. In fact, they are all teachings of the Buddha. And that's something that we need to remember, because sometimes there are people who say, oh, this sutra are for beginners, too easy. This one is better, recite this sutra. In fact, remember, they are all teachings of the Buddha. Yeah. So Buddha is a teacher, a great teacher who realized the truth, who have great wisdom, great compassion, purity of mind, and also mind of equality to all sentient beings. So he compassionately help others equally, and also he's very skillful in teachings. So if a teacher as such, think about a teacher as such who understand thoroughly the causes of suffering, how to end suffering, and prove that he himself have realized that peace and ease. And not only that, he don't have that ego, he's not going to defame you or scold you or put you down. You find that you feel comfortable to be with him, because he's peaceful in himself, and he's compassionate, he wants to help, and he's skillful, and he teach anyone who wants to learn. So a teacher as such, when you're with a teacher as such, you feel comfortable and you feel like it's a very good example for us. So that's why when we understand the virtue of the Buddha, we feel respectful. We develop our respect to the Buddha. We thank the Buddha for his wisdom and also his compassion in sharing the teachings with us. Because the Buddha's wisdom and compassion is so thorough that he's not only teaching the people during his time, he also thinks about us who are not living in his era. And that's why he formed the Sangha order, for people who are interested in the teaching to come together. And when the people who are interested comes together, they all follow the Buddha's guidance and follow the guideline of the precepts, so that the Sangha order can maintain its purity and become a conducive place to practice. And hopefully the Sangha members can prolong the teachings generation after generation, creating a causes and conditions for future sentient beings to be able to enlighten. So that's the how wise and compassionate the Buddha was. So yeah. So with a person as such, when we understand the Buddha's virtue, who has perfect wisdom of identify what causes suffering, and not only identify the causes of suffering, he also tell us the method of practice. That's important. Because if the Buddha only tell us life is imperfect, life is full of suffering, and everyone agree, yes, life is full of dissatisfaction. So what? So how? Are we going to sigh every day and have a sour face every day? If the Buddha stopped there, then it's very sad. And the Buddha also identified the causes of suffering. So as we say, the first one, the truth of suffering, in fact, everyone experienced that, regardless of whether you're Buddhist or non-Buddhist. And the Buddha identified causes of suffering, and that's where it differs from other religions. Different religions' way of explaining suffering is different, right? So the Buddha identified the causes of suffering come from our ignorance and desire. And he says that, think about it carefully. Do you think these are the causes of suffering? If we eliminate our ignorance, if we develop the wisdom to see the truth and free ourselves from greed, hatred, and desire, your mind will be at ease. And then he also tells us the method of practice. That's very important. Because without the method of practice, if he only tells us the suffering, causes of suffering, and say no cure, then it's just very sad, very pessimistic. Right? But the Buddha gives us a cure, which is very important. And that's why we have to be very thankful to the Buddha for his wisdom and his compassion in passing down the teaching for us to practice, and also from the Sangha order for us to be able to have guidance during our time. So when we think about the Buddha, we think about a great teacher. He's also like a great father who is taking care of us. He's so wise, so calm, so peaceful, so kind, and we feel happy to be with him. So that respect, appreciation, and sense of gratitude towards the Buddha. When we develop this, then we have sentimental feelings towards the Buddha. The Buddha is like our teacher, is a person who can give me good guidance. So that's why Buddha is the gem of Buddha. So it's a very precious thing. Because think about, in this world that we're living in, we are all looking for some guidance. Who can give us a guidance that is so pure, so peaceful, no side effect? A lot of time we look for some cure, there's always side effect. Even doctor prescribed medicine, there's also side effect. But this one has got no side effect.
We might have to wake up.
We have to wake up. Yeah.
It's quite scary.
Huh?
It's scary to wake up.
Scary to wake up. Yeah, we don't want to wake up. That's the problem. We are overdosed with the sleeping pill. Yeah. Yeah, and that's where people don't want to wake up. Like for example, you say, oh, you want to shave off your hair? Oh no, I want my hair. So people are reluctant to wake up.
Yeah, that's the whole point of being alive, being born, is you don't want
to. We try to create happiness within the suffering that we have, and still try to have a blind eyes and say, there's no suffering.
Well, the teachings are so profound because they are at different levels, and if you are seeking to end your suffering, but you're quite stubborn, you want to maintain your suffering, the basic teachings are awesome because they'll creep in over time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It is not easy because we have these habits in ourselves, stubbornness in ourselves. So a lot of time, yes, we all know that anger causes suffering, arrogance causes suffering, but it just keep coming up. Yeah, but we just have to keep using the teachings to remind us. And that's why attending talks as such, like set it as a weekly kind of homework for yourself, helps you to refresh yourself so that we don't forget about it. Even though we may not improve a lot, but at least if we don't deteriorate, that's good. Yeah. So that's why it's just like we say, in the Christians, they go to the church once a week. It's good, because it helps you to remind yourself of the teaching. So if you can set yourself like once a week, at least you need to come to the Dharma talk or meditation class, whatever it is. It's a time for you to calm down yourself, to look inward, because we have been looking outward all the time. And whatever training that we have at the university, in the society, is teaching us to look outward, chasing after desire, fame, and so on. So it just take a bit of time once a week. If you can have take up sometimes every day, say 5 or 10 minutes to calm yourself down, to sit down for 5 minutes or 10 minutes and tell yourself that I want to read a paragraph of Buddhist quotes or Buddhism teachings once a day or things like that, that can help you to sort of refresh yourself as well. Because sometimes it's quite refreshing especially if you are, you always read economics, finance, law. Oh, when you start to read something which is totally different, it's related to your life, you find that it's actually very refreshing. So you can set some kind of homework as such for yourself, so that you don't go as the suffer get go become lost too much. And so if you always have that kind of collecting your mind, when you want to practice meditation, it will be much easier.
Yeah. Just reading a little bit of the text every day is good. Some of the stories that write, like the white elephant.
Yeah, that's right.
Story,
yeah.
And then just thinking about it, and then observing one's own behavior and observing other people, or looking at a tree. Just thinking that the tree and yourself, you're connected, it produces the oxygen, the gas we breathe, we produce the carbon it breathes.
Yeah. Dependent origination. Yeah, dependent origination. Yeah. And people can look at the tree when the leaf fall, they attain enlightenment, impermanence. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, there were stories in the Buddha's scripture, and also in Vinaya, there were this monk who was contemplating on impermanence, and he didn't get to enlightenment, and then with a wind blow and his robe just fly, and he attained enlightenment. And some look at the incense burning, and realize there's no 1 second is the same, impermanence, and that's where they realize the truth. But it's not, you need to practice, and your mind has become focused on that point, and certain incident will just then trigger your insight, and then they gain they realize the truth. Yeah, it's not saying that you don't do anything and it just come. As we say, one of the Zen master was practicing, and someone bring a cup of tea, and then accidentally drop, and the cracking of the cups make him enlightened. Yeah, so because the sound comes and go, you see. So when your mind is focused, and that's where all these small things, all these things become a trigger that allows you to realize the truth. So that's why we say Buddhism is everywhere in life. You do not need to run into the forest or live in seclusion. It's everywhere in your daily life. Yeah. So Buddha is such a great teacher that we feel comfortable to be with, and we understand his virtues, and we really feel very appreciative and very lucky, fortunate ourselves, that we are able to encounter the teachings of the Buddha. Because there are so many religions in the world, which one identified that the causes of suffering come from our ignorance and greed and hatred. To us, we have listened to this again and again, we thought it's normal. But when you say to others, they didn't never heard of this. Yeah. So Buddha is rare. You can see that from 2,600 years ago in the history of Buddhism, we know that there's a Buddha who have 10 enlightenment, who share with us this profound teaching. But how many Buddhas do we have now? Only one. Up to now, it's still only one. Yeah.
That we're aware of.
Huh?
Remember, he offered to teach. He didn't have to.
Yeah.
He could have led.
Yeah, that's right. So he's compassionate. Yeah. So that's why it's rare to have Buddha, and that's why it's precious. Okay, so that's first one. And Dharma. Dharma is very precious as well, because the teachings of the Buddha explain things so thoroughly, impermanence, that everything arises due to causes and conditions, there's no fixed entity, causes of suffering come from greed, hatred, arrogance, jealousy, selfishness, and basically things are explained so clearly. And you find that the Buddha's teachings, of course, include the explanation of phenomena, the truth of phenomena, the truth of the causes of suffering. And the Buddha's teaching also encompasses a lot on the practices that can help us to progressively improve ourselves and path our way to realization. And that's why the Buddha's teaching is the teachings that help us to become more confident, more at ease as we practice if we practice correctly. Okay, if you are not practicing correctly, there are people who are not practicing correctly, their ego become bigger and bigger, then they are not at ease. Some people practice meditation and they start to think, I think I'm the Buddha now.
That's why you need a sangha to get it slapped down.
Yeah, so we have to remember, ego, self-centeredness is the main cause of suffering. If a person practices, the ego becomes stronger and stronger, and you start to become more conflicting with one your friends. Your friends all do not like you anymore, and everyone start to defame you, and you say, I'm a very good practitioner, there must be something wrong. So sometimes there are people who say, I've been practicing Buddhism for quite a while, I'm not sure whether I'm on the right path. So firstly, I'll just say, do you feel that you know how to justify right and wrong better now, and your relationship with one another become better, and you are more embracing, you are more at ease with some comments or criticism, and that you find that you are a happier person. If, after learning the Buddha's teaching, you become a more stressful person, then that means you probably haven't applied the teachings in the right way, or you have interpreted it in the wrong way. Okay, so regardless of whether you are practicing precepts, meditation, or listening to teachings, remember, the Buddha's teaching, all teachings the Buddha taught us, is to help us to reduce our greed, hatred, arrogance, jealousy, selfishness, and encourage us to develop more sense of respect to others, consideration for others, compassion, forgiveness, patience. So these are the values to develop. So if after we learn the Buddha's teaching, we become more arrogant, there's something is wrong. So there are people who, after, as we say, after upholding precepts, they start to look down on others. You all are not upholding precepts. I am the only one who is upholding precepts. That means maybe he or she is upholding the precepts, but then he or she did not realize that her arrogance grow at the same time. And same thing with listening to teachings or studying scripture. Some people have liked studying scripture, and then they start to feel that they are very knowledgeable on the Buddha's teaching, and they start to become very proud of themselves. The Buddha's teaching is not for you to show off, it's for you to apply. Right? So that's why, to test whether we are walking on the right path, if you become a person who is more at ease, more embracing, more understanding, more patient, then probably you're probably on the right path.
It is quite when I met a Mahayana monk, mm-hmm. in Melbourne, mm-hmm. 2008, mm-hmm. and I was super ignorant, and I was older, doing the game. But through just listening and going to the classes, it's a big transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why learning the Buddha's teaching, listening to the teachings is the starting point, and it is through listening that we understand how to practice, and what are the things that we need to learn, what are the things that we should not cling on, and so that we make sure that we're on the right path. And so the Buddha's teaching is rare as well. It is like you all study a lot of subjects at the university. UNSW offer a lot of different types of combination of program this day. But which subjects tells you about end of suffering? How to reduce your greed, hatred, ignorance? Only Unibus. Right? So that's why it is very rare. And it is a teaching that makes us a happier person. And you find that in life, we are not just relying on the knowledge that we gain from university. Yes, knowledge is one thing. Your certificate, you graduated, and you have all high distinction, you go to work. But that is your knowledge. You need to relate with people in the company. And you need to confront a lot of challenges. You need to take setback. You need to accept criticism. you need to, if you become the leader, the senior manager, and you need to guide others, you need to learn to embrace others and also make them happy as well. There are a lot of things, and all these are not something that university teach you. And that's where the Buddha's teaching helps you to learn to relate with others, and that's why we say that coming to university, join some club and society, especially club and society that allows you to develop yourself in your personal development, is important. It should be one of the subjects. Yeah, because if it's only just academic, you find that you go out, you find that it may be quite difficult, unless you are a very sociable person and that's your nature. Yeah, but otherwise, you find that it can be quite challenging. So club and society become a small scale kind of society for you to learn to relate with friends of similar background, and also in for example at Unibus, you have teachings that guides you to deal with things in the right way. So that will help you to be a happier person. So Dharma is rare, and it is the teaching that help us to free ourselves from affliction, to be at peace and at ease. And Sangha, as we said just then, Sangha are rare as well, because looking in this society, and it is so rare that someone wants to become a monk or a nun.
You've
got to
get up at 4:30.
Yeah, it's true. That is the first question that people say. Yeah. I don't mind to become a monk or a nun, not if I stay at home. I can't get up so early. And then you can't play games, right? You can't watch movie.
Yeah, have a
and you can't go to the pub, right? Yeah, so it's rare, right? Yeah, so that's why you find that to be able to understand, but of course that is just external, or something that we can see, but the reason why Sangha is a gem, Sangha actually refers to the order. So four persons form the Sangha order, at least four persons. And so Sangha members, they together, they follow the Buddha's teaching, they form, they try to pass on the Buddha's teaching. That's very important, because they carry with them the responsibility of prolonging the teaching, and also they take care of the monastery and make sure that in this world that we're living in, where there's a lot of chaos and disharmony here and there, hopefully when everyone comes to the monastery for some spiritual support, they can sense a sense of ease. And also they give encouragement to Buddhist practitioner, that they sometimes, some people may feel that Buddhism probably is for people during Buddha's time, because there were no internet at that time, there were no Wi-Fi, there's no iPhone, there's no all these games that Facebook and Twitters and make people distracted. So it's easier for them to practice. For people in this era, it's too difficult. It's probably not for us. Some people may be thinking that way. But then if you see that there are Sangha members in this era, living in the same era that you are in, they may have also iPhone for communication, but they can keep themselves from not indulging in the phone, but just use it as communication. So why can't you? So they are living in the same society as you. If they can keep themselves away from unnecessary attachment and desire, why can't you? So they give encouragement to you that it is possible. Because otherwise you say, how can a person go without a phone in this era? We must have a phone. You see, it all depends on how you use a phone.
Are they ordained people to be in the Sangha?
Yes, that's right, ordained, okay. Yeah. So Sangha members, they try to create a harmony order, so that the Sangha members can support one another, encourage one another, at the same time provide a peaceful place for lay people to come along to practice. And that's very important. So Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha together are rare in this society, in this era that we are in, and they are actually the foundation of Buddhism. So it's not just one gem, because you can see that why we call it a triple gem, because if only with the Buddha attained enlightenment, he didn't left behind the teaching, he attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree and then entered Nirvana, then we don't have the teaching to follow. And that's why the teaching is very important. So when we respect the Buddha, we need to also respect his teaching. And we need to also respect the Sangha, because the Buddha himself alone, that's during his time, but how did the teachings prolong up to what we have today? We need to rely on the Sangha. And so that's why these three together collectively form what Buddhism we have today. So there are three very precious things. And we can also look at this Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. So that's why even during Buddha's time, you find that when someone wants to, during Buddha's time, when a layperson wants to wants to become a Buddhist, the Buddha tell them to take refuge in the triple gem. So taking refuge means seeking guidance. I want to seek guidance. I want to seek shelter under the guidance of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Because a lot of people try to pray to the Buddha for protection. How can the Buddha protect us? The Buddha tell us the teaching. He tell us cause and effect. There are certain things that you should not do, otherwise you're going to lead yourself to suffering. So he tell you up front. So if you follow the teaching, that's how the Buddha protect you. So that's why when the lay people go to the Buddha and say, I want to become a Buddhist, the Buddha tell them to remember the virtues of the Buddha. So the Buddha is like a role model for us, who is wise, who is peaceful, who is kind. And so when we want to become a Buddha's follower, we should remember, I want to use the teaching to help myself to gain wisdom, to become as wise as the Buddha, as peaceful as the Buddha, and also as kind and compassion like the Buddha. So regardless on whether you are upholding precepts, practicing meditation, chanting, listening to teaching, it should gear towards this direction of attaining perfection like the Buddha, who is wise, who is kind, who is calm. Because a lot of time people say, oh, what should I practice? And they tend to then stop at the, start to entangle in the practice, not knowing what is the purpose of the practice. So it's a bit like the Zen master's story of pointing at the moon. Have you heard that before? The moon is very bright and use your finger to point at the moon. My finger is to show you the direction to look at the moon. But if you keep looking at my finger is too short. If you keep looking at my finger and not looking at the moon, you're not going to see the beautiful moon. So the Buddha, so that's why the Dharma are just like the finger or like a map for us to get to the goal. Alright? So the Buddha is like a role model. And the Dharma are the teachings, right? So when we need to understand the teachings that help us to attain perfection like the Buddha, because the Buddha said everyone can attain Buddhahood, it is by perfecting your human characteristic and personality, get rid of the afflictions, develop fullness to the perfection, then you find that you attain Buddhahood. And so Buddha is a role model. The teachings are the methods, or like we say, like you, if the role model is like a goal, yeah, you want to go to Canberra, you have a map, right? And that's the map. Dhamma is like the map, yeah, allows you to know how to get there. And then on the way, you may lose the way. Sometimes we do not know how to look at the map. You need some guide, right? So then the Sangha will help you so that we can all. So that's why you can see that Buddha is a role model, it's like the goal. And then with the teachings, the methods, and the Sangha are like the tutors, instructors, that helps you to understand the teachings better, and so that you can achieve your goal much easier. So that's Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Sometimes we also exemplify the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha collectively. So that's why we don't just take refuge in the Buddha, but we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So during Buddha's time, the Buddha say, I go to Buddha for refuge, I go to Dhamma for refuge, I go to Sangha for refuge. These three are very important for someone to step to move the first step into learning the Buddha's teaching. Yeah, a lot of time when we give talks and a lot of time we start to talk on something very profound, there are a lot of people who still do not know what is triple jam. And so when they do not know what is triple jam and they start to talk about a lot of profound things, sometimes you miss the foundation, right? So and sometimes we exemplify the Buddha, like the doctor as well, who diagnosed that we have imperfection or we have problem. We have sickness. What kind of sickness do you have? Agitation, anger, jealousy. Those are illness, right? It's true, it's illness. You can see that there are people who have a anger management problem. You see, when it becomes too strong, it becomes an illness. But of course, in our case, we are still under control. Rationality, control yourself, right? So, but we hope that we can reduce them more. So the Buddha said we all have some kind of illness. Greed, hatred, ignorance are the illness that we have. And he prescribed the medicine for us. And so with the medicine, then we need to take the medicine. So the medicine is to take, right? As we say, I think I told some of you this story before. There was this story about this sick man who went to see a doctor because he was sick. And the doctor say, okay, go home, take this medicine, drink more water, have good rest, and you will recover. So he go home, he take drink more water, and have rest. But then he took the medicine, he read the instruction 3 times a day. You know, they're writing on the bottle, read 3 times a day. So after a few days, he didn't recover. And he said, this doctor is useless. But do you think this doctor is useless? It's because this sick man didn't have the common sense of taking the medicine. He's just reading 3 times a day. So this is also to tell us, if we learn the Buddha's teaching and we're just reading the scripture and not relating it to our body and mind and try to use it to correct our bad habits, then it doesn't help us much. Theoretically, you may understand, but you may not. That's why we say Buddhism is not a philosophy. It is practice and understanding. Understanding and practice must go hand in hand. It must be applied into our body and mind in order to experience the benefit of the teaching, or in order to experience what the Buddha really wants to say. Without that digestion process, it is a bit like your mom cooked food for you and you don't want to take it, you just look at it, analyze it. It won't become your energy. It is only when you eat it, and if you eat the food and your intestine is not good and you don't digest it properly and you just pass go to the toilet, then it still won't transform into energy. So you need to digest. See, the medicine need to be taken. So if there is a nurse at the side and remind this sick person, no, you don't just read 3 times a day, you need to take the medicine, then the sick man will probably recover, right? So the sick man, so the nurse will be like the Sangha. So it helps us. So the Buddha prescribed, is the doctor, prescribed the medicine, and then you got the Sangha who gives support. And that's how we can recover from our illness. So that's why we say the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, the triple gem is always collectively together. So when we learn the Buddha's teaching, we always respect the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. You don't just say, I don't care about the Buddha. Dharma is most important now. The Buddha is not around with us. I just want to... But you have to remember, these good teachings that you are learning come from this great teacher. If you don't have respect to the teacher and you just want to use the teaching, and you think this teaching is good, as long as I practice the teaching, I can attain enlightenment. Who cares about the Buddha? Then, that's not very good. That shows your ego. Because we need to appreciate that this teaching comes from this wise teacher who is so compassionate that share the teachings with us. So when we have that modesty, it will allow us to learn the teaching better as well. If we don't have that modesty, then you find that somehow deep in yourself there's this good strong sense of ego that you didn't realize. Yeah. So and sometimes you also exemplify the Buddha's teaching, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, like the teachers, right? So you got your goal, and then you got the textbook, and you got the teachers to guide you, and that will help you to achieve your goal better. So you can see that it is always together, and so the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha are the foundation of the of Buddhism, and it is from here that the Buddhism developed. So when we talk about impermanence, Four Noble Truths, novel and Four Paths, Dependent Origination, they are all within the Dharma, alright? So, but it is with Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, it collectively presents Buddhism as a whole, okay? So it is very important for us to understand the virtues of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and always have respect Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, because without the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, we wouldn't have Buddhism today. Okay, all right, I think we'll stop here today. Is there any questions?